Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. And it is the Tuesday before the Tuesday that really is counting right now. We're a week out from Election Day, and we are talking this week with various people to get some perspective on what the election means to them in terms of certain topics. Today we have two is immigration attorney Nadine Brown. Nadine, are you there? Good morning.
I am. Good morning. Thanks for having me again.
Always happy to have the warrior princess on. How are you?
I am doing well. So I'm thanking God for all the blessings.
Amen. Great and small, right?
Yes, indeed.
So let's get going. And forgive me for, I'm driving for a couple of minutes. Hands-free, though. on the steering wheel, that is, but not on the phone. Anyway. Give me your take on what this coming election means with regards to immigration issues.
Well, it's not just immigration, but I think overall to change and shift the climate, this is a huge election with everything that we've seen since March and since actually 2016.
Specifically, but the for where it's.
Okay, so for immigration in particular, it's a big deal because we who are either immigration advocates or people who are in the process of trying to legalize their status want there to be changes. This particular administration has been increasingly hostile towards immigrants, even though they try to portray that they're for law and orderly immigration. They have done a lot of things to seed terror into the hearts of many of the immigrants who are aspiring to legalize their status or to become U.S. citizens. So this is a big moment for us to see what the next 4 years is going to hold and if the policies are going to shift or they're going to remain the same and become more and more hostile and an affront to the foundations of this country, which was built on the immigrants coming to its shores.
So we know what has happened thus far in terms of, you know, immigration policy and enacting certain executive orders and whatnot when it comes to immigration. And the thing that I've really had a problem with is, like, you don't, if at all possible, you don't break up a family if it's no reason to break them up. You know, if the family's working. You know, nobody's being harmed. You don't break the family up. And I saw a lot of that with, this administration.
Well,
and it may have happened before, but, you know, that's the thing that kind of bothered me.
I think it bothers a lot of people. It's particularly striking because you have a president who, you know, is part and parcel of the Republican Party, although we know that in every camp, no one person speaks for everybody, although he is the figurehead and he's supposed to be the embodiment of what the Republican Party stands for. And they have been throughout history in many elections the party of family values. And it just seems an affront to family values where you hold, you know, the family unit as on a pedestal as the epitome of what it means to be an American, and it's the nuclear family primarily, and here you have an administration whose policy has gone to the heart of destroying that for immigrants coming to the United States looking for safety and for a future for their kids. So it's not just something that is really abhorrent and shocking for you, but to many people also in the Republican Party, that this is what it has come to, seeing children in cages or children who cannot be reunited with their family members because the administration and the bureaucrats have lost contact or didn't keep proper paperwork or didn't care to, and then to have the audacity to say that, well, they're being well taken care of, when we know that there were stories upon stories and reports that some of these children and these family parents were not even given basic services, whether it's, you know, clean potable water and personal hygiene items like soap and toothpaste. So it's very unsettling and disturbing at the very least. And so we're hoping that with this election there is a sea change in policy with a new administration, and that things would get better, not just for those who are detained, but for those who are trying to go through legal process or obtain, you know, work visas or investor visas, which is becoming increasingly difficult with the Buy American, Hire American campaign that's been waged in the application process.
If you had to pick a number one policy that needed to be changed, what would it be and why?
Well, right now I know that it's the asylum application process, which every day we're getting things across our email about how they're making it more strict and stringent for people to come to this country and to request, you know, refuge, which is essentially what the basis and the crux of the asylum process is supposed to be about, where you give people an opportunity to come here, and now they're making it difficult for people who even, you know, may have been arrested on a DUI or a domestic charge without a conviction. So we know that we're a country of laws that's hammered into our heads every which way, from the street protesters to the people in court. We're a country of laws, we're a country of laws. And here it is that we're trying to obstruct the law or make it so burdensome for people to comply with the law. And if you have individuals that are just arrested, it doesn't mean that you are charged. You have to go through due process, which means you have your day in court and your say, and you can mount a defense. And sometimes we know, police practices being what they are, that charges may get dismissed, charges may be trumped up, charges may not have any merit, and some of them, you know, may have merit. There's some bad actors, and we definitely need to get rid of them. But so for people who get jammed up in the system, either because of poor language skills or lack of knowledge or cultural ineptitude, they're the ones that get caught, you know, arrested, and so they may not be convicted, and yet still the administration wants to use those things against them. And as far as their asylum application. The other thing are the migrant protection protocols that were put in place by this administration, who had the zero tolerance policy that put the kids in cages. And the migrant protection protocols is where individuals don't even get to set foot in the United States. They are told they need to stay and wait in Mexico, and a lot of them are in squalor because they're like tent cities set up in a state that's also hostile, or a country that's hostile to them, waiting to get into the United States. And a lot of times there's not enough officers or people that are able to screen them. So there's still that going on. So to answer your question, as far as what I would change initially, would be asylum, which is one of the reasons why I started with immigration, is to help those who are the most vulnerable, who are fleeing persecution or harm in their countries of origin. And that is the one process that is every day seeing some sort of cut or manipulation by this administration to reduce the possibility of being granted asylum, or even the opportunity and access to applying for asylum. So if you're in Mexico and you can't get a screening interview, or you're here and, you know, you may have somebody call the police on you, a malicious neighbor or a malicious family member or something goes sideways and you don't have the language skills or the ability to pay for somebody other than a public defender, then essentially, for lack of a better term, you can get screwed out of an opportunity to find refuge in a place that has been billed to you, marketed to you as, you know, the land of milk and honey and a place and a refuge for people around the world. So it's that would be the one thing I'd say that I would change initially if I had my choice. But there are many other things that need to be modified and reworked to make it more equitable and fundamentally fair in a decent process.
And what are those other things?
So right now the administration with the Buy American, Hire American is trying to lock out, in my opinion and in other advocates' opinions, you know, tech workers and foreign workers who come here. I mean, there have been studies to show that there is going to be a shortage of workers in particular industries now with the COVID crisis. We know that nursing, which has always historically been an underserved or underpopulated industry, always seeking to get foreign nurses, a lot of them from the Caribbean and Africa and Asia, the Philippines, you know, but some of those workers are having challenges in applying for H-1B type visas, J-1 visas, because the embassies are still closed, and then when they do open, it's few and far between that can get visa appointments. You know, the tech workers for the FANG companies, Facebook, Apple, Netflix, and Google, who are our coders, a lot of them come from India and the Middle East. Some of our engineers who are working on our vehicle automations and those, you know, bells and whistles that we all like to gawk at when they talk about, you know, the new vehicles that are coming out, whether it's electrical or self-driving, a lot of them are foreign engineers as well. So they may apply for H-1Bs, but they're limited. They're, one, increasing the fees on those, and two, limiting the amounts or the types of cases that may be reviewed and adjudicated and approved. So, you know, the foreign workers definitely is an area of immigration that the administration is targeting and is also under a lot of pressure, as well as we know because of the other travel bans that have been in place because of designated terrorist, programs in the countries, most of them Middle Eastern and a few African ones that have, you know, bans on entry. Those are things that also need to be changed. So there are other areas, but I think that across the board, this has been an administration extremely hostile, and there needs to be an overhaul. I mean, everybody, I think, had the consensus that immigration needed to be reworked to make it more comprehensive, more coherent, and more orderly a process. But even now, I think they've swung so far to the right that they're trying to make it increasingly inhospitable and to discourage people from wanting to come, and those who are here, you know, trying to pressure them to leave. So besides the asylum, I would definitely say our foreign workers need some assistance, and I'm hoping they would be encouraged with a new administration and an overhaul of some of the executive orders that were put in place by Donald J. Trump.
So say we do get a new administration in the upcoming election. What the things that have been done, they, you know, some of them, they just took a while to be put into place, and some of them were put in place, you know, for a while. And so what I'm thinking is some of that stuff is going to be hard to undo.
For sure. I mean, you know, the bureaucracy does not turn on a dime. So you're talking about personnel, revising policy manuals, you know, what Customs and Border Protection and Immigration Customs Enforcement, what their directives will be. So it's, you know, even if you have like a transition team and you're trying to, you know, rework some of the political appointees and the people who serve at the pleasure of the president, you need to consider that some of those positions and some of the executive orders, even though they may be rescinded, to put new ones in place to make sure that they survive any kind of legal tests, because we always have the mechanism of taking them to court, as you see with some of the executive orders. They had to be revised because they were challenged in an appeals court. So there's that process. So it may take a while, but at least I think psychically and emotionally it will do a greater good to know that the atmosphere has changed, and that good news could be coming, if there's any hope, you know, for individuals who are looking forward to what tomorrow will bring. You know, there is that. But, yes, change does take a while to manifest, but we just need to be patient in that.
So let me ask this. Regardless of the administration, how do you strike a balance between Americans, natural-born Americans, or legalized Americans, you know, wanting and needing to keep jobs, you know, and trying to accommodate immigrants who really need a better life from which they came. So how do you balance that, and how do you make the process, I guess, in terms of citizenship, more fair and balanced to everyone?
Yeah, and I don't think it's mutually exclusive that there has to be one or the other, that you have to either accept, you know, citizens or accept immigrants. Usually it's whomever is qualified for the position, but there are certain industries that it's very difficult to find qualified candidates, or the applicant pool is so limited. I mean, we've had this discussion that a lot of the jobs that immigrants are taking are not those that are desirable for a lot of Americans who are already here, and then there are issues with, you know, the minimum wage. So when we're talking about the cost of labor, if you're looking at it from an industry perspective, it's, you know, who are my available workers, and I will take anybody that is qualified, that's skilled, or that I can train and that has loyalty, and will accept, you know, the wages that I'm offering. If you're talking about the job applicants, it's, well, you know, where can I make a decent living? And if you're an immigrant, maybe remit money back to my country of origin, because I have family members there that are dependent on me. And if you're an American citizen, it's, you know, you want the American dream like everybody else, which is to buy a house you know, a car, and be able to afford for your kids to have health care and go to school. So sometimes it just depends on the perspective, but I think to have a balanced view, it's making sure that people are qualified for the positions and want the jobs. So the Buy American, Hire American excludes populations of people who, you know, may be inclined to particular industries, whether it's agriculture, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's food processing. Which, you know, most Americans, they want a $15 an hour job and, you know, better benefits, whereas some immigrants that are new to the scene are in survival mode and will take anything that they can get. They're more likely to be your agricultural workers, your landscapers, your hospitality industry workers. And then again, it just depends on education and access to certain areas that some other people don't have. So I don't think you can exclude, you know, anybody from a job market if they're qualified and they're willing to work. I mean, Florida is an at-will workplace, so people can, you know, be discharged or fired for cause. And we're always looking for new people to take different positions. Sometimes you have a hospitable or inhospitable work environment and there's high turnover. So the other besides healthcare, you know, workers and nurses is teaching. I mean, we're always looking for teachers, and we see people graduating with bachelor's degrees or master's degrees, and they may be shifting from school district to school district or position, or they don't want to do administration, they want hands-on, or they don't like the curriculum or things like that, and so they're trying to recruit from overseas. So it's just a matter of who is willing to work and who is qualified. And it's just like our federal system. If you have, you know, veterans who may have a preference, I don't think anybody should have a preference in any particular industry. And again, the issue should be your skills and qualifications. So I don't think that they're making an issue where there shouldn't be one, because how many of us, you know, are going to work in a transitory industry like agriculture and go based on where the harvest is at the time of year from state to state and uproot our children and do those types of things so that we can have fresh vegetables and nice produce, organically grown or free range, you know, meat products in our grocery store.
Well, I guess because you mentioned that question, and it brought to mind a story that my mom told about her brother that used to go from, you know, depending on the season, he would be down here picking oranges,
mm-hmm.
and then
Migrant
he'd go
workers.
Up north to New, yeah, and then he would mm-hmm. go up north to New York, you know, and then send the money home to
mm-hmm.
Her grandmother, who was taking care of her and her sister.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So and that's it's a good example because I just actually finished reading the Warmth of Other Suns by Isabel Wilkerson, and she was talking about the first migrants weren't, you know, immigrants coming to this shore, you know, seeking refuge through Ellis Island, but it was, of course, the African slaves, much of which were migrating from the south to the north, and they were historically the migrant agricultural workers. And then once those individuals started to move up the economic chain and move to the cities from the countryside and from the deep south, then, you know, those particular areas needed new workers, and that's when they started looking to the migrants that were coming in from Central and South America. So, you know, and that's what happens. Sometimes it's like, you know, people are moving up the economic chain, and so there's new industries that open up for new laborers that are needed.
Hmm. Well,
so I don't think we should not be pit one against the other, but it's whomever is available, who is skilled, and who's willing to work in that particular industry.
Okay. I do want to move away a little bit from the election itself to something that just took place, and that is the new Supreme Court justice.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of impact do you think her confirmation is going to have with regards to immigration issues, or do you think the court will be more involved in these immigration decisions?
Well, I think that anytime that you have a group, an individual, or an organization that is challenging an immigration law, it's always going to be taken to the courts. So we have the opportunity of accountability to take it to the courts. And then if we're not happy with the decision at the appeals level, you know, which we hear in the news all the time, Ninth Circuit, 11th Circuit, which is just like geographic regions of the country that can hear certain types of federal cases. And then once those decisions are made, either party can appeal the decision of the court and take it up to the next level, which will be the Supreme Court. So it is, I think, part and parcel of the Republican conservative plan that you pack the court with individuals who are more right-leaning and conservative in their views, more strict in the way that they read the law. And so it's to anybody's benefit who is a hardliner against immigrants for Amy Coney Barrett to be on the court so that she will shift, hopefully, the decisions towards a more conservative, anti-immigrant bent. But at the end of the day, any of those justices should be looking at the specific rules or policies that is being reviewed to determine whether or not it was constitutional or equitable in the administration of that rule or policy. So, you know, I know in her confirmation hearings, she was very ambiguous in some of her responses. Hopefully it will hold true that, like many before her, that her moral compass and her true identity is reflected in her writings and not just her political spin. And we've seen that throughout the course of history, even with John Roberts, who they I think there was some pushback from people in his own party to say, okay, well, what are you doing with some of the decisions? And really, if you're a legal scholar, you're supposed to be looking at the four corners of the documents in front of you and listening to legal arguments. And it's not so much your political spin as it is your understanding of the law and how that particular issue may be shaped or changed by previous laws. That should dictate how you make a decision. So I'm hoping for the best, and I'm trying to be optimistic, but, you know, it is what it is. And with all of the news items and bits that are flying out there about her, that for immigration, those conservative hardliners are hoping that she will swing things and you know, ratify everything that William Barr and the Justice Department is doing against immigrants, if it ever is challenged in court. But, you know, we're hoping that people have consciences and will be enlightened in the process and the prestige of that particular office.
A lot to think about, you know, really. I wanted to ask you, though, what have you seen in terms of changes with regards to immigrants coming to the United States? And especially I wanted to ask if there had been any real impact because of COVID.
Well, I know that the numbers are most likely down and people trying to get through the southern border. I mean, news doesn't always travel fast when you're walking or you're on foot.
Right.
But everybody's got a device and, you know, people talk. So I'm sure that many have heard, and I know that there are still, you know, people trying to do caravans to the United States, and how successful they will be, you know, only God knows, really. But I know that the numbers are down because of a lot of the restrictions for people to travel out of their countries, whether it's by plane or by boat. But those who are coming by foot, I think it's just become so increasingly arduous, and people are aware that it's a global pandemic. So with the COVID, not many people are trying to come unless they're in such desperation that they will try any and everything to flee wherever they're coming from. So the actual numbers I couldn't tell you, and I do know that the southern borders, I think they said they're down, you know, several thousand than they were at this point last year.
Maybe for anybody that's having, like, questions with regards to, you know, maybe a loved one that's trying to get through the process or wanting more information, how can they contact you?
So the best way right now is by phone or by email, and my office number is 407-678-2224. I'm always available by email in case we play phone tag, and that is esquirebrown@nadinebrownpa.com. There's free information available at my website and also information about my skills and qualifications. And for immigration information, most up-to-date is going to be at the uscis.gov website, which is the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services website, which is a part of the Department of Homeland Security. The best thing that I can tell people, you know, if you have questions about immigration or about voting and how to exercise your right, or if not this election, maybe the next ones that are coming up, how to qualify to become a U.S. citizen, then feel free to give me a call at my office number, 407-678-2224. Email me with your brief questions, or we can set up a time to connect by phone, and that's esquirebrown@nadinebrownpa.com.
Nadine, as always, you are most welcome on the show, and appreciate your perspective and your work. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, and I heard your shows before, and I know that you open and you close with the go vote. If you have not already submitted your ballot by mail or absentee ballot, then definitely do early voting until it cuts off, and then vote on November 3rd if you're thus inclined, and be clear about what you believe and what kind of America you want the next four years to be.
Right, and you've got the internet. Do your homework. Find out who these people are that you're voting for. You know,
if you don't know, definitely do a Google search and, you know, check the campaigns. Ballotopia is a good resource. And, you know, ask questions if you need to, but definitely do your homework. And if you're, you know, reluctant, then go down ballot all the way if you're a Democrat. And if you're a Republican, then, you know, I'll pray for you. But either way, it's make good choices about what kind of America you want this to be.
Okay. Nadine, thanks so much. God bless you, and talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Also, by the way, if you have an absentee ballot or voting by mail, whatever, I would suggest at this point, because of the numbers, take your ballot in. Go drop it off at the Supervisor of Elections office on Cayley, downtown Orlando. You don't even have to get out of your car. You can just drive up, hand it to them, they'll take it. Or I understand they're taking some of these ballots at the various early voting places. So find your nearest early voting places and, you know, just make sure that – but make sure you're signing your ballot. That's the other thing. They're getting a lot – I think Supervisor Elections here in Orlando said that he had so far that haven't been signed. Make sure you are signing them. Make sure that, you know, I think I heard where he's had one person say it was signatures inside. No, sign the envelope. Do like they said. Don't mess it up. You can try to make the changes in between elections, but we're in elections now. Follow the instructions and sign your ballot and take it in. So please do that after the show. Anyway, we are going to talk the economy with Paul Z. Shelton when we come back. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We had Nadine Brown, attorney Nadine Brown, on the last half hour. Thank you to her. Thank you also yesterday to State Representative Bruce Antone for his perspective. Now we are talking the economy with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore. Good morning. How are you? Good afternoon. Uh-oh. Is Paul not there? Oh, goodness gracious. That is not a good thing, but hopefully we'll have him on soon. Anyway.
No, I'm here. Good morning. Can you hear me?
There you go. Hey.
I'm sorry about that. There were some technical difficulties on my end. I apologize about that. But good morning. How are you doing today?
Good afternoon. Doing all right. How about yourself?
Hanging in there as much as we can, given the COVID environment, the election environment, everything that's going on in this crazy world right now.
So, all right, well, let's have it. You know, I mean, there may or may not be a change coming up in about a week or so with regards to who will be in charge for the next 4 years. What kind of impact do you foresee that happening on the economy one way or the other?
Typically, whenever you go into an election season, you do have an impact on the economy, an impact on the stock market, just because of the uncertainty. So whenever there's a potential change in the presidential regime and there's a change in Congress, you can have the potential for either higher taxes or lower taxes. Typically, when the Republicans are in control of Congress in the White House, we do see tax rates diminish or go lower, and the opposite is true whenever the Democrats are in control of things. So on the surface, that is the biggest concern. Typically, from a fundamental economic standpoint, we look for which party would be in control, and we kind of gauge what the tax situation would be off of that. And then that kind of gives us a little bit of insight into how corporate America will perform over the next 4 years. That's in a typical year. This year is anything but typical. It is atypical by all sorts of the mean. 2020 is something that is known as perfect vision and clear optics in the optometry world, but 2020 has been anything but clear. There's been so much volatility and so much unknown in our society as of right now that even though we will see significant impacts from the election going forward, it's very uncertain the severity or how significant those impacts will be and when those impacts will really take control. And the reason I say that is because no matter who wins, whether Congress turns completely blue or completely red, or if the White House is red or blue, no matter who wins, we're still going to be facing the coronavirus pandemic. And whoever is president come next year will still have to combat all of the negatives, all of the symptoms of the coronavirus in our economy. So then it becomes a point as to where are we going to move forward with economic stimulus. Will there be another round of economic stimulus disseminated, or will there not be another round of economic stimulus disseminated to help us combat, you know, the coronavirus pandemic that we are in right now?
Okay, so you know, it's how, because there's so many facets of this. My head is spinning. The way that our country is handling it, it's not only affecting the people within our country, but it's also affecting, you know, how we interact with other countries right now. Tell me about that kind of impact.
Yeah, so that is a significant impact from the geopolitical standpoint. Many countries, many of our allies are a little disenfranchised in how we've handled this pandemic thus far, and some of the rhetoric that's coming out of the White House from the president regarding how severe the coronavirus is, regarding safety protocols with wearing a mask, without wearing a mask, and things of that nature. We've seen a divergence between us and majority of our allies, I should say, for that stance, and how they're conducting safety protocols in their countries and how we are conducting it here domestically. More recently with Europe and Spain, they're taking, you know, stiff protocols to really stop the spread of the virus there. And that involves, you know, putting some strains on their economy, but it's the prudent thing to do, unfortunately. America has always been kind of the tyrant. We broke away from England. We became the new England, and we didn't want to really follow the rules of what the old England and what the Queen wanted to do, and that kind of set the precedent for where we are today. We don't want to follow, you know, a lot of the CDC guidelines and stringent rules, and we're not socially governing ourselves all the way from the top of the government all the way down in the respect that we should be to help stop the spread of the coronavirus. Now, this is leading to significant geopolitical concerns between us and the rest of the world. Hopefully, it will not be a long-term stain on our relationships, you know, with the rest of the world. But it is showing, the frictions are showing right now. And what could come out of this, you know, when it comes to an economic impact, is if we continue to diverge in such a way, other countries and other allies may say, "Hey, we want to hold off on any domestic commerce or any foreign commerce with you at this time for fear that you're not handling the coronavirus in the manner that we think you should." And that could have some short-term and long-term, you know, ramifications on our economics.
Yeah, because I'm sure, you know, number one, this has created distance where you didn't have it before just by virtue of not traveling to and from other countries. You know, a lot of stuff is, you know, is technology driven right now in terms of how you connect with people. And even though that is better than nothing, to me, it still is a hindrance in some respects. You know, a lot of the cultural nuances that you deal with when you're meeting people face to face, you don't get a chance to learn and overcome those types of situations a lot of times via technology. And that, I think, causes some hesitancy with some people, in addition to the pandemic.
Correct. It definitely does, and on two respects, and I guess at multiple levels. The handshake itself was designed to be a level of agreement, a level of trust between two parties. And when you're in a COVID environment that we're in now, it is hard for countries to have that handshake agreement. So you really have to, you know, develop trust across the wavelengths of the internet at this point right now, and it makes things a little bit harder, and it drives a wedge, a little bit more disconnect, I should say, between potential allies in that respect. So it does make it and diminishes the value of trust that you may have, and it could make conducting business a little bit tougher.
So let's just get down to it. How do you see the main thing that would be the difference between a continuation of a Trump administration versus the issuing in of a Biden-Harris administration?
So typically, whenever you have an incumbent that is reelected into the office, things start to really move fast, and there begins to be a little bit more momentum in their agenda and whatever that agenda is. You have a president at that point in time in their second term that knows that he or she will not be reelected into a third term, and knows that, you know, this is their last stamp to make a stamp on history of their legacy. So all the things that Trump has, you know, talked about on the campaign trail and in his first term as president, we will start to see more formation of those things. And that's typically what you see. Now, Trump has made several promises of things that he's going to do. He's advised of several plans for infrastructure, plans for healthcare, you know, plans for defeating the coronavirus. But unfortunately, we haven't seen any of that. We just hear that there's plans there. So in a typical environment, typically what you see is in that second term, whoever that president is will push forth with all those plans. Typically, they may have congressional support in both sides of the House and make things easier for them to move forth in those plans. But where we are right now, it does not seem like President Trump has any plans, unfortunately. So if he is reelected, you know, no one is certain, and I don't even believe the Senate Republicans are certain as to what his true plans and true motivations are. I've heard many Republicans say that they don't consider Trump a Republican. He's someone that's after his own personal agenda. And if you look at his track record just recently and just some of the things he's did, and not considering when he was a registered Democrat, but if you look at his track record, he does not really embody all of the caveats of a traditionally of the Republican Party. He deviates a lot from the norm, and it seems like there's more of a personal agenda that's pushed, and he's not communicating well within his own party as of right now. So moving into a second term under a Trump regime, you know, we still will have a lot of uncertainty. We wouldn't have the notions that, you know, there would be a significant change to our healthcare format. There will be a significant change to our infrastructure, or there will be a significant plan or any implementation in place to combat the coronavirus. So that's what we would see in round two, I would say, of a Trump presidency, is probably just more of the same. And the same would be a little bit more amplified, which could be scary. Under a Biden-Harris regime, I think we will see somewhat more of a normalization in the tension in this country. The racial tension and the social injustice has spiked and has reversed the clock, it seems like, on this country back 60 years, if not more. And I think that, you know, a regime under Biden and Harris would start to normalize things and get us back onto track and moving forward in this 21st century and moving forward where we are currently today with equality instead of inequality. I also think that we will see some more normalcy when it comes, you know, to the health care plan and at least somewhat of a plan when it comes to infrastructure and implementation of changes with how we're dealing with the coronavirus. For one, dealing with the data that is being disseminated across the country about the number of cases and about how we should protect ourselves. I think the overarching theme and overarching message that will come from Joe Biden would be one of protecting yourself, protection against the coronavirus, and protecting your neighbors by having the proper PPE, by wearing your mask and doing those essential things. So I believe that will be some of the things that we will see initially, possibly in those first 100 days of presidency, because we are still dealing with the coronavirus. Now, as we position ourselves and move past that initial phase of presidency and dealing with the coronavirus and the pandemic, and hopefully it will be subsiding by then, and that will take us into the springtime, then I think we will start to see some footwork and some framework put together on revamping and dealing with the healthcare system and taking that forward to the next level. As well as some things around infrastructure under the Biden-Harris ticket. One of the things that has been a concern for many people and many people on Wall Street is that if we do see a blue sweep of Congress in the White House, that we will potentially see higher regulations and more regulations on the technology industry. Although this concern is there and although it is mentioned that we're going to have more regulation in these industries, this is something that has kind of been a self-fulfilling prophecy. We've been moving in the route of more regulation on the tech industry for several years now, and we really will just be catching up to, again, Europe at that respect if we were to levy more regulations upon the tech industry.
I don't see... I don't know, and maybe I'm looking at it wrong, but I don't see a real problem with some regulations on the tech industry. We've gotten to the point in some cases where we've developed these monopolies. You know, there was, from cell phones to, search engines and stuff like that. You know, there was a merger between Sprint and T-Mobile, you know, as well as others, you know, that has occurred. So we've got these big conglomerations. Some regulation provide a little bit of reining in on these larger companies and allow for more competition, which usually serves the consumer better.
That is true, and I agree with that 100%. Regulation has always been an important staple of having health within our financial system and having health in our society as a whole. Regulation is something that we should not be afraid of, but we should embrace. The fear that Wall Street has is that they do not know the extent of what the regulation will be and how that will handcuff many CEOs in the technology arena from being able to pursue massive profits and in turn pay massive dividends or grow their companies internally by keeping the money internally. So that's been the biggest fear from that. We just don't know what the extent of the regulation will be. But I am a proponent of regulation, especially when it protects society as a whole. As we can see, you know, with this coronavirus, regulation sometimes is essentially a required necessity, I should say. It's hard to have a country of this size and require them to self-govern themselves with just wearing a mask. In my course of the day today, I've been to the store and I've seen people with masks on. I've seen people without masks on, and we're currently living in an environment and in a county where there is a requirement to do so. And many of the stores that I went to today has a requirement to do so. And some people were not wearing their masks, and some people had them on, but they had them on under their chin and were wearing them incorrectly. So It comes to a point where it's like the regulations are required, and regulations are there for a reason to make sure that the overall safety is first and foremost. And I believe that that will be true of the tech industry as well.
Yeah, you have to remind people you wear a mask and socially distance. I had somebody behind me today. It was like, I just had to take the difference because, part of me wanted to say something. I was like, you're a little bit too close, and it was crowded quarters anyway. And then, part of me wanted to move up, and I'm like, no, I don't move up because, I still have to do my duty of respecting the person that's in front of me,
Correct.
Yeah, I know. But off on a tangent. So, okay. Say we have this change in administration, as I mentioned with our last guest, Attorney Nadine Brown. Some of the stuff that has been done in the last 4 years, it may take some time to, reverse it, unravel it, untwist it, or whatever. And then I guess one of the questions I want to ask you is, what were some of the good things, what should be kept if this administration changes, what should be kept and what should be discarded with regards to the health of the economy?
Oh, boy, that's a loaded question there, because there are so many things that has shifted and changed over the last, 3 years and changed. And many of the things that were thrown out are adjusted. In my opinion, we're not done so based on principle or based on the economics, but was more so done so just to unravel what the previous administration or previous administrations have established in our economy. One of the things that that we were seeing a pullback on was the regulations regarding Dodd-Frank and some of the stipulations that were put on the financial industry. We all know, leaving out of the Great Recession, much of the regulations that were put on the financial industry were put in place to protect banks from taking on too much leverage and offering too much leverage and financial leverage to consumers, which increased the overall risk of our economy. Those regulations have kind of been peeled back a little bit. And now many banks, many financial institutions still have regulations in place, but there are some areas where that risk of leverage can be applied, and it opens up the door for additional risk down the road. Now, I personally did not see a significant change in the profitability when the regulations were put into place. When you look at the financial statements of many of the large banks and financial institutions before the regulation, and then you look at those financial statements now, there is not a stark difference. Some of the major differences are deals with the compensation. We're no longer allowed to have many of those CEOs have windfall compensation based on the risk that they're placing on their consumers. So that's something that I think that was changed before and has been repealed now and pulled back. I think that's something that we should revisit again and possibly not take forward into the next regime. I do like the fact that Trump has taken a stance of dealing with some of the inequities between the United States and China when it comes to a trade deal. So I would like to see something push forward and those negotiations continue to move forward to have some reconciliation between the United States and China, and to be able to protect our intellectual property that we have whenever we're using China as a third party or as an outsourced manufacturer. So that's something that I think that we should embrace and continue to move forward with. Possibly the tenor and the tone in which that is handled may be adjusted, but I think that's one thing that we potentially can keep, and we should continue those conversations since they've already started and been ruffled a little bit. Then those conversations initially started roughly about 3 years ago, caused a lot of volatility in the market. And even where we stand right now between the U.S. and China, as consumers, we don't see any difference. So even with, through all the rhetoric and all the tone and all the tariffs back and forth, the only thing that we've had take place is increased prices and inflation in some of the consumer goods that we've bought. We haven't seen any, you know, major shifts or any noticeable shifts in the protection of the intellectual property of many U.S. organizations. So this will be something that, you know, hopefully the Biden-Harris regime, if they, you know, win next week, they can pick up and carry forward from this current presidential regime that we're in right now.
Okay. What other, we got a few minutes left. What other issues do you think we need to be concerned about with regards to the elections? And I also wanted to ask you quickly about your take on the new Supreme Court justice and impact that will have.
Yes. So I think going forward, you know, some of the things that we would need to look for and hopefully whoever is elected into the White House next week, what we need to see is some more financial support and economic support for the current stance that we're in right now. It doesn't feel like we are in a recession, and statistically, we may have ended the recession in the month of October, but there are still several potholes in the pavement of our economy right now. There are still a lot of people that are struggling. There are a lot of people that are unemployed, and if not unemployed, they're underemployed. So they're significantly behind the eight ball on many things, on paying their common expenses, planning for retirement, and things of that nature. So as we continue to move forward, we definitely need something in place for providing stimulus for those individuals in our economy. And I'll say it from this standpoint, in Orange County here locally, to run a daycare center, you typically, the average daycare center in Orange County needs roughly anywhere between 60 to 75% occupancy of students to break even, 60 to 75% occupancy. Since the pandemic, most of the daycares in the Orange County and Greater Orlando area was totals, I think, just around 400 daycare centers. All of those daycare centers are running roughly at about 40% occupancy when you average them all out. There are many students, many kids that are staying home because parents are home for various reasons, because of fear of the coronavirus, possibly because they may have an older sibling that is not in elementary school, so mom and dad decided to keep them home as well. This is putting a strain on those daycare centers. Many daycare centers are at a point where at the end of this year on 12/31, if there's no further support, they will close. And what that will be is catastrophic for the 40% of occupancy that they still have. So those students that are still in there right now will immediately have no place to go. And for many of them, if mom and dad are unable to find lodging for them or other alternatives for them, mom and dad is going to have to come home from work now. So that's going to severely impact our economy going forward. And this is something that we're not just seeing locally in Orange County, but it's something that we're seeing all across the United States. So that's just one segment, one small sector of our economy, but it will catastrophically affect everyone in totality. So from that standpoint alone, there is something that needs to be addressed when it comes to the economic stimulus and when it comes to providing more health for our economy.
Paul, thanks for taking the time today. You're due back next Friday after the election, so you know, hopefully you can join us, and then we'll more then. But thanks for taking the time.
Sounds good.
And get
good.
Some
Thank
rest
you so much
with
for having
new
me.
Baby.
Yes, it's definitely needed. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, you guys, go out there and vote. You know, take your ballot in if you haven't mailed them. Seriously, I kid you not. Also, make sure you sign those ballots, please. please sign that, the absentee ballots, mail-in ballots. Also, watch out for the Listeria warning that I told you about yesterday. If you are eating Italian deli meat, there may be an issue, so you might want to back away for a little bit. But anyway, thanks for listening. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Stay well, stay safe, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.